see how our congregation responds. So go ahead and take your phones out and scan that QR code. It'll take you to slido.com. If you don't have the ability to scan the code from where you're at, just go to Slido, S-L-I-D-O.com. And then it's going to give you a place to type in this number that you see right here, 176-7901. When everybody's there, just kind of look up and make eye contact with me, and then I'll put up the first question, or have the tech team in the back put up the first question, that is, when everybody's kind of logged in at least. So you've got, just like the pain scale there when you go to the hospital, you got this frown faces and the smiley faces asking you to mark how content are you right now. The frown face would be, I am the least content I have ever been right now. And the one with the hearts would be, I am the most content I have ever been right now at this very moment. Not seeing any more movement, so it looks like as a group we scored 7.2 out of 10 on the content scale right now. Let's go ahead and go on to the next question. The question is, did you make a New Year's resolution for 2024? And there's four choices there for you. We'll see a pie graph of how we did together here. If there's anybody still trying to answer this one. If not, looks like 57% said no, I didn't make a resolution this year. Next was no, I never make a resolution. So by and large, no resolutions were made this year. 7% said yes, they did make one, but they already broke it. And there's zero of us, none, have made a resolution and kept it so far this year. Interesting. And let's go one more question. This one's kind of tricky. It may require a little bit of explanation. So the question is, what contributes most to your sense of contentment? You get to choose three of the following. Rank them. The number one thing that contributes to your contentment, number two, and number three. You only get to choose three out of these many choices. So look them over and choose your top three, and then at the bottom of your screen there'll be a send button. Thank you.
looks like there's still at least one person working on it still. Okay, anybody else still working on this one? So interesting, the top three choices for this group today anyway are, whoop, we got one more working on it. Maybe. Maybe somebody's changing their answer. Top three choices were my relationship with God, a relationship with another person, and having free time to do something I like. There were a lot of choices available on there, but just narrowing it down to three things that most contribute to your sense of contentment might be difficult. Okay, well, that's kind of fun. We might use some more of those throughout this year.
If you couldn't figure it out already, the topic of today's... What happened? I've got a blinking red light. Does that mean I'm dying?
The topic of today's sermon is contentment.
It was originally having a commitment to contentment. It was some fun with alliteration, having a commitment to contentment. But then the more I thought about it, I thought, I'm not sure that being content is always a good thing. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But contentment in general. Let's talk about that a little bit today.
Thank you.
I'd like to turn to Philippians chapter 4, verse 11. And while you're turning there, I'm going to see if I can put up a cartoon, but I'm asking the guys to do a lot back there, changing batteries and flipping screens and doing surveys, so
we'll see if we can get there. There's a cartoon. Contentment. The grass is always greener on the other side. Here we got four cows, and each one of them's reaching over the fence to get the grass from the other side. Sometimes we do that, don't we? So let's look at Philippians chapter 4, verse 11. Philippians chapter 4, verse 11 is the one that I really want to focus on, but for context, I want to read verses 4 through 13. I'm reading from the NIV. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Verse 10. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am now saying this because I am in need, for I have learned... Verse 11, I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through through him who gives me strength.
On the survey, there were some choices in the rank the things that make you content or contribute to your contentment. Food was one of them, and it may not have ranked in the top three for all of us, but if we go even just a short time without a meal in America, we get kind of cranky. We're not very content, not very pleasant to be around. The writer here speaks about knowing what it's like to be hungry and well-fed, but in all things he's learned to be content. As I was thinking about the New Year's Eve midnight service and then what I might want to say on the last Sunday of the last year and the first Sunday of the New Year, I was thinking about contentment, and I was thinking about the story of Joshua leading the Israelites across the Jordan River into new territory. And so I want to look primarily at that story today, and that's found in the book of Joshua, chapters 1 through 5, but we're mostly going to focus on chapters 3 and 4 today. But again, for some context, I want to just kind of go through Joshua chapters 1 through 5, hitting some of the highlights. So turn with me there in the Old Testament if you have your Bibles. Joshua chapter 1. I'm going to just real briefly go through the who, what, where, when questions about this story. So they're kind of summarized up here on the board for you on the wall. Who we're talking about, the central figure in the book of Joshua and in this story is Joshua. He succeeded Moses as the leader of the Israelites. The Israelites, having spent years in the wilderness following their exodus from Egypt, are now poised to enter the promised land, the land they've been looking forward to basically for generations. They've been looking forward to entering this promised land, and now they're just right on the verge of entering as we turn in Joshua. What is going on in this story? Well, in Joshua 3 and 4, the Israelites are on the cusp of crossing the Jordan River to enter the promised land. The narrative here recounts the miraculous event at the Jordan River. It parts, the water parts, as the Ark of the Covenant, carried by priests, lead the way. 12 stones are set up as a memorial to commemorate this significant event. Those of you that were here on the New Year's Eve service know about the 12 stones. We talked about them a little bit. Some of you may have noticed this morning as you came in by the lighthouse out front, there are 12 stones now piled up in a little heap there. We did that as kind of a hands-on object lesson to remember this story and remember crossing from one year into the next and how God has been with us all throughout the process of 2023, and we are asking him to be present with us in 2024, and in fact, not just be present with us, but that we be present with him, that we follow his guidelines, follow his lead for 2024. And so we've piled the stones out there out front, and so each time we come in and out of the church, we'll see those and remember where we have been and where we hope to go, just like the Israelites did here in the book of Joshua. We'll read more about that. And where did this take place? I'll put a map up in a moment, but this episode takes place near the Jordan River, specifically at a location called Gilgal. The Israelites are situated on the east side
of the river, preparing to cross into the land of Canaan. And so when they do, they're going to be very near what we now call the West Bank of Israel, the West Bank of the Jordan River. So the West Bank, it's kind of funny that they call it that because it's really the east side of Israel. So the Jordan River kind of forms the eastern edge of the Promised Land. And so when they crossed over from the east to the west, they crossed into what's now called the West Bank area. And this is where they were, what's still now in the news today. And when was this happening? So the events of Joshua chapters 3 through 4 are believed to have occurred around 1400 to 1370 BC during the Israelites' conquest of Canaan. The timeline places it shortly after the death of Moses and Joshua leading the people into the Promised Land. Those are givens, but exactly when that was, scholars think around roughly 1400 years before Christ. So if we are here now roughly 2,000 years after Christ, this was pretty close to 3,500, 4,000 years ago from today. So here's a map. Here's a map of a little bit about what I was talking about. Here's Egypt. We know that the Israelites were in Egypt as slaves for a period of time. Moses led them out. They crossed the Red Sea. The waters parted so they could cross as they were fleeing from the Egyptians. And then they wandered around in the wilderness for about 40 years and eventually made their way up here. This is the Dead Sea. Here's the Mediterranean Sea. Here where it says the Philistines, that's where we get the word Palestine, Palestinians, Philistines. It's related words. And this is roughly where Gaza is right now. Well, you see Gaza right there, actually. So this is what we're looking at. Jerusalem is right here. So Joshua and the Israelites are right here on the east side of the Jordan River, and they're about to cross into what's now considered the West Bank area. Here's a more modern map. Here you see the West Bank. Here's the Jordan River, the Dead Sea, Mediterranean. Here's Gaza. This is where all the fighting is right now. So very close to everything that we're seeing in the news right now. Here's a kind of three-dimensional picture. Most of us are familiar with the story of Joshua and the Battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. They had a walled-off city here. It's kind of hard to see in this lighting, but we've got a city that's got some elevation to it, walls around. The Israelites are waiting on the east side of the Jordan River right now. As we begin this story, they're about to cross over and go to Gilgal and then ultimately take over Jericho. So on this map, here you've got the Mediterranean Sea, the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea, and Gaza would be over in this area.
So Joshua chapter 1, verse 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give to them. To the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, and from the great river, the Euphrates,
all the Hittite country to the great sea on the west. No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you." This is important because we hear in the news now people chanting on college campuses about driving the Israelites out from the river to the sea. But right here, God promised this land to the Israelites, even way back then. It wasn't promised to the Palestinians. And so all these 4,000 years, roughly 3,500, 4,000 years ago, it was promised, and it's still something that's highly contentious. In Joshua chapter 2, this is the story of a couple of spies going into Jericho to check things out before they cross the river. The Israelites are still camped out at the east side of the river waiting. They send two spies into Jericho, and Rahab the prostitute takes them into her home. Let's look at Joshua chapter 2, verse 10. What does she say? This is Rahab the prostitute speaking. "We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below." So Rahab, a prostitute, a person who we wouldn't think is of high character, is very familiar with the story of the Israelites, what has happened. But this was over 40 years ago that they crossed the Red Sea. But the word's getting out about what happened. It reminded me of in the book of James, chapter 2, verse 19, how it said that even the demons believe that there's a God and they shudder over it. So just believing that something happened is not really enough. Even the demons believe that. Even prostitutes believe that. Even the people that are the enemies of God believe there is a God and believe that he did amazing things. At Christmas time, a lot of times we see signs and decorations that say just the word believe. Lots of times it's talking about that guy in the red suit, you know. Other times it's just talking about something ambiguous. I don't know. Believe in snowmen or believe in I don't know what. It's just a decoration. We just put the word believe up because it feels nice, you know. Even the demons believe there is a God. Even the prostitute heard there was a God who did amazing things. Even the kings were shuddering and scared. The spies went back and they told Joshua that was waiting on the east side of the river, the Jordan River, in chapter 2, verse 24. They said to Joshua, "The Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us." Put a question mark there in my Bible because I'm not sure that it was because of them, but rather because of their God. But that's what they said anyway. So let's look at chapter 3. Joshua chapter 3. "Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went through the camp, giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priests who are Levites carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 1,000 yards, 10 football fields, roughly. Keep a distance from the Ark of the Covenant. Between you and the ark, do not go near it. Verse 5, Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. Joshua said to the priests, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on ahead of the people. So they took it up and went ahead of them, and the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all of Israel, so they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river. Now, let's pause there for a second. Right at the end of verse 8. God told Joshua to tell the priests, go stand in the river. No big deal if it's the Kishwaukee River, but this is the Jordan River, and this... The rest of the chapter tells us it was at flood stages, and some scholars believe that it could easily be a mile wide at that time, and maybe as much as 100 feet deep. This is not a little river. This is a big river, and Joshua is just supposed to tell the people, tell the priests, go ahead and go stand in it. Sure. That's going to take some faith to do that. Now, Moses, when he parted the Red Sea, he had the benefit of holding up the staff, and the waters parted before the people went in it. And as soon as they got out of it, it swallowed up the Egyptians. But this is a little bit different here in this story. What's supposed to happen is the priests, when their feet touch the water, then it's going to create a pathway for them. So they have to get their feet wet. They have to have a little faith in action and trust their leader and trust that he is following God's direction. Trust that God really told him that. Verse 9, Joshua said to the Israelites, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, and all the otherites. See, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe, and as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. I've never seen a heap of water before, and they had not either. So he's describing something that nobody's ever seen. Verse 14. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan. While the water flowing down to the Sea of Araba, the Salt Sea, or the Dead Sea is another name for it currently, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. So there's a miracle. As the priests carrying the ark step into the overflowing Jordan River, the waters miraculously part, allowing the Israelites to cross on dry ground. And of course, this obviously echoes back to the crossing of the Red Sea in Exodus. It highlights God's consistency in delivering his people. The Jordan River represents the barriers and challenges we face, and the miracle signifies God's power to overcome them when we trust and obey. Then, for the sake of time, we'll go through these last points quicker. There were 12 stones that we already talked about. After crossing, Joshua set up 12 stones taken from the Jordan, taken from the middle of the Jordan River, to serve as a memorial. These stones reminded the Israelites and future generations of God's faithfulness and mighty acts. And similarly, we are encouraged to build our own memorials commemorating God's intervention in our lives to strengthen our faith and share his goodness with others. I think back to other places in the Bible where God specifically tells us, teach your children about this. Set something up so that it'll cause them to ask you questions. And when they do, then tell them that I am God and what I have delivered you through. Deuteronomy 6:4 is known as the Shema to Israelites. It says in Hebrew, Shema, Israel, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad. That means the Lord God is one. Hear, O Israel, the Lord God, the Lord, the only one, is God. It goes on to say, teach these things to your children when they walk along the road, when they lie down, when they stand up, when they leave the house, write them on your doorposts so that every time you're coming in and out, you're going to see this and you remember and you recite these things together, that there's only one God and I am it. And we're to be teaching our children that. And that's what was going on here, is God knew that he's done miracles and blessings for these Israelites over and over and over, and time again they complain and they forget. Just like we do. They'd been led through the parted waters of the Red Sea already. And not too long after that, they started complaining and whining. Complaining about the manna, complaining about the food provisions. They asked themselves and moaned and cried out loud, why couldn't we have just stayed there in Egypt and died? This is awful. We'd rather be slaves. Let's go back to that. Let's go back to slavery. And sometimes we do that too. We all struggle with sin. None of us, not even one in this room, has kept a resolution that they made 7 days ago. Most people said they didn't even make a resolution. That could be true. Or not, but maybe your resolution was to not lie as much. Yeah. Either way, none of us have kept our resolutions even 7 days, and that's how it is with sin. I thought about putting in the survey, but it only gave us the option of three questions. But I wanted to put in there where you can answer anonymously, how many have sinned already in the first 7 days of the year? It should have been 100% probably, if we were honest. And then if we weren't honest, then that's a sin of lying. So we all struggle with sin. We all forget that God has led us through these things. And even when we were just here the other night and we set those rocks up and we said, you know, think about something that God has led you through this year, or something that you want to trust in God better about this coming year. I myself had things in my mind that already, it's like haven't even, I've fallen short already in 7 days. So I want to conclude with this. The crossing of the Jordan River is more than just a historical event. It's a profound lesson for us today as we face our own Jordan rivers, as we wonder about, is the grass greener on the other side or not? Should we stay where we're at? We're reminded to consecrate ourselves first, follow God's guidance, trust His miraculous power. And as we're delivered through things, build memorials of gratitude, share our stories of God's faithfulness. We can contribute to the legacy of faith for future generations. I started off by saying, is it good? Is it always good? Should we have a commitment to contentment? Is it always good to be content? Can we be too content where we're at? I think so, sometimes. The definition, according to the dictionary, of contentment is a pleasant happiness. I didn't actually write it down, but that's a basic idea, paraphrase, is a pleasant, kind of blissful happiness. We can be blissfully happy in our circumstances when God is calling us to cross the Jordan River, or cross our own Jordan River. Sometimes it's not time yet to cross into something else. So where are you right now? Think about that. Are we blissfully content somewhere where we shouldn't be? Are we discontented? I don't know what the right word is. What's the opposite of content? Somebody tell me. I almost put it on my slide, and then I was working on this late at night, and I almost put up there in content, and then it came out as incontinent, and I'm like, no, we're not incontinent. So I don't know what the opposite of content is, but are we that? Are we just anxious about things? So back to the last verse I want to read again, the same one I started with, Philippians 4:11. Philippians 4:11 says, I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through Him who gives me strength. And on this page of my Bible, I've got notes from three different pastors who have given lessons that I thought were interesting on this same topic. One was from Mark Shane from Indiana. He was speaking at a youth retreat one time, February 18th, 2007. He said, look at the map. How long have you been at this campsite? How often do you stop to look back? Remember, we're just a traveler passing through. I thought that was interesting. Look at your map. How long have you been at this campsite? Should we stay here or should we move on? Debbie Bryant, a pastor of a little church in Rockford, speaking at the Macomb Church on March 18th, 2007. So just about 1 month exactly after I heard Mark Shane speak on this same topic. She said, look at what Paul says here. Whatever the circumstances, he's content. She said, sometimes, like the pain scale, everything's sort of relative, and we're content under these circumstances? You know, we compare things to other experiences in our life, and we say, well, we're content under these circumstances, whatever we're in. And she said, God doesn't want us to be under the circumstances. He wants us to be overcomers, to be overjoyed, no matter what the circumstances. And then finally, Nathan Massey, on March 7th, 2021, a couple years ago. I'm going to turn it this way to read it. He was talking about the pain scale again, and comparing our circumstances to how content we are. So I ask you, like our survey said, how content are you? And is that a good thing or not? Should we be content where we're at right now? Or is God calling us to consecrate ourselves and cross the river? Is God calling us to quit wandering around in the wilderness and follow a new leader? Is God calling you to trust that there is a leader who is called by God to tell you something in a way that maybe you haven't been willing to listen to before? Also, in this story, in the next chapter, it talks about how after they crossed the river, before they went in and invaded Jericho, they stopped. They had a meal together. They celebrated the Passover, which made no sense militarily. They sat down, they had a meal together. Then Joshua said, well, God told me that whoever hasn't already been circumcised, we got to get that done before we go any further. Again, that makes no sense militarily. They decided to have an operation in a very sensitive and private area and then heal up before they went any further, all while they're waiting on the west side of the river in enemy territory. So I say that because I wonder, is God calling us to be more vulnerable with each other, to allow each other to see a more sensitive side of ourselves before we can really accomplish something? I'm not saying, you know, show that part of your body, but that's a very intimate thing to allow somebody else to have access to that part of your life. And sometimes there's parts of our lives that we don't want to share with our church. We don't want to share with our fellow believers, and maybe that's holding us back from where we could be going or what we could be accomplishing. The Jordan River is more than a historical event. Are you content where you're at? And should you be? Let's think about this week and this new year as we go forward from here.
For our close